Is there really good science, though, in science fiction? If you look at it and go, you know what, that's brilliant. That's going to happen.
And it, again, it depends. It depends an awful lot on the movies, and it depends on the direction the society goes. There were elements of Star Trek that are certainly very predictive of where we were going to be in the future, and there's elements of Star Trek that certainly aren't very predictive of it. One of the things that Star Trek did, and they've talked about this repeatedly, is when Captain Kirk kissed the communications officer, and it was the first time that a black and a white had kissed on the air and in that arena. And today, you know, who cares?
It's
not a big thing anymore, but here was something that science fiction did to kind of break down that barrier that should have been broken down years prior to that.
Why do science fiction films seem to have the support of people, the fan base, the Trekkies, whatever you want to call them? Science fiction films, more than just about any, seem to have an audience, or in a very close audience, almost like a cult.
I think it all comes out of the fan base for the written science fiction from the 1930s. The first World Science Fiction Convention was held in 1938. And so you're bringing together people who have an interest in something to a specific thing. And I think science fiction kind of, as I said, explores where we're going to go in the future, where society may be going, and is suggesting ways that society can be improved. If you look at 1948 and the idea of the three different worlds, the first fighting one another, and they're switching sides back and forth, and everything is very totalitarian, and so you've got a predictive nature there. If we don't do something about this, we may end up in that sort of an arena. So I think science fiction warns us about what the future can be and how bleak it can be, but it also tells us how just fabulous the future can be too, if we
do it right.
If we do it right, and we think about where we're going and what we're going to do.
Well, here's the big question, Kevin: will we do it right?
Have we done it right to this point?
No, we haven't. You know that.
Absolutely. So, and you know, science fiction looks at things like global warming and what has happened in the past. We talk about global warming and how it's changing our environment, and the real question is it the influence of the human race that's causing the global warming, or is it something that's a cyclic?
I think it's a cycle. I think humans may add to it, may speed it up, but I think this was going to happen anyway.
Yeah, and I agree with you. If you go back and you look at astronomy, I think it's around 1600. Things warmed up in Europe so that the growing season was longer, that the growing season extended further north in Europe and allowed things to happen in Europe that may not have happened had things remained cold. And we've in the last 100,000 years, we've gone through 15 ice ages or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so it's something that's cyclic. And can the human race do anything to change that? Well, maybe we can, but maybe we can't. So, but you get movies like The Day After Tomorrow, where they're suggesting that it's brought on by human occupation
right.
of the planet.
Exactly. You know, did you know that was based on Art Bell and Whitley Strieber's book, The Coming Global Superstorm?
No, I did not know that.
Yeah, it sure was. They got the rights, but then they changed the name for the movie. You know, the way Hollywood does its thing.
Those bastards.
Yes, they did it again. They did it.
Well, and Hollywood does that a lot. That they you know, how many of the science fiction stories that you read are faithful to are the movies faithful to those stories? Again, we can go back to the thing, 1938. It really is about a shape shifting creature that crashes on Earth from 1938, but in 1950, it's basically just the giant carrot idea,
mm-hmm.
With James Arness being the giant carrot, by the way. But they don't do the shape-shifting aspect of it. But when you get to the 1982 version, it's much closer to the 1938 story by Campbell.
What was the name of the sci-fi film and there was they were trying to send you home a message about the nuclear holocaust. These huge ants. Was it ants or them
well,
or something?
Well, them was I think the first of the giant insect film.
Right. Now, would you call that sci-fi?
No.
You wouldn't?
Well, because...
I would.
Well, from the strictest definition, you wouldn't. But, of course, it's a science fiction
film. You're a purist.
Yes. Okay. Looking at it from a strictly pure point of view. And then it followed up with the beginning of the end with the giant grasshoppers.
Yeah.
Which was absolutely hilarious, hysterical.
All right. What would you call King Kong or Godzilla?
Again... Godzilla's predicated on the idea that somehow our atomic testing has either created the monster or awakened the monster. And King Kong is on an island in the South Pacific somewhere, or the Indian Ocean, where the giant beasts still live. And I guess you could call King Kong science fiction, although I don't know of any apes that get, or mammals that got to be that large.